Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. After more than a year of talking about the 2024 race, we are here, our final show before the last day to vote. And we brought in two of my favorite panelists to talk about it. Peter Hamby is a partner at Puck News, host of another great podcast called The Powers That Be, and the Snapchat show Good Luck America, where he recently went on the road to swing states. Melanie Mason is with Politico, was my debate co-moderator for the Senate race, and is just one of the smartest, coolest people in politics. Got them together to talk about all the big issues, the presidential race, the congressional races. The Menendez brothers came up. We talked about newspaper non-endorsements. We talked about all of it. And so here is our discussion, starting with the presidential race. Peter, Melanie, welcome to you both. Here we go. Crunch time is here. Real concisely, can you explain the state of the presidential race?
I'll explain it in a concise and fun way, which is last night a donor texted me, a Democratic donor, saying, "Oh, you just got back from the swing states. What are you hearing? What do you know?" And I wrote back to him, "I don't know anything. What do you know?" So the secret for the viewers is that the insiders think it's just as close as you're reading in the polls as you're reading in the news. I talked to one Democratic operative today who thinks Kamala might be coming up a little bit in their internal tracking right now and peaking at the right time. But look, it's just all a jump ball.
Melanie, are you hearing something similar?
I mean, so much so. I mean, I was really struck by talking to Democratic operatives who I think are pretty plugged in and in the know, and them saying to me, "Do you really believe what they're saying on Twitter?" And I'm like, "You're asking me." I think it just goes to show there's so many reams of data. There's so many different metrics you can point to that says maybe this is a good sign for Harris here or maybe a good sign for Trump here. It's almost a choose your own adventure of these data points at this point. At the end of the day, it's going to come down to what is the composition of this electorate, and nobody can tell you that for sure.
Peter, you did the more important thing than even just relying on the polls. You actually went to the swing states and talked to people. Yeah. So here's a clip from your episode of Good Luck America at Penn State.
Who are you voting for?
I'm voting for Kamala Harris.
Why?
I like her compared to Biden.
I'm voting for Donald Trump. For me, it's really just the threat of rising global conflict.
What'd you hear from people on the ground?
I had two big takeaways. One, the economy is the number one thing you hear about, especially for these young people. They say they're scared of graduating into a world where rent is too high. It's hard to find a job. They can't compete. Lots of polling and surveys of Gen Z express similar concerns about their own personal financial lives and a lot of anxiety there. So even the Kamala Harris voters open to the idea of Donald Trump a little bit because it might make their pocketbooks a little healthier. The other thing I learned was the difference between the nice private schools and even the bigger public schools like Penn State that are in, you know, a highly competitive, engaged battleground state versus the commuter schools, the public schools, where you have voters, diverse, middle class, working class, not paying attention to the news cycle as much as some of the other students. I found that to be very interesting. It really proved out that the biggest divide we see in politics is people who follow politics all the time and people who don't, and then might come out to vote in the end. We'll see.
And you also went to Michigan, where you went to Wayne State, where you focused a lot on the issue of the war in Gaza and how that's impacting Muslim students. Watch this.
Who are you guys going to vote for?
Third party, for sure.
Third party,
you're
Jill
both voting
Stein.
Jill Stein voters.
Yeah.
Why Jill Stein? Perhaps why not Kamala Harris?
Because she's supporting a genocide.
I can't make that decision to give either Kamala Harris or Donald Trump my vote.
Me as a Muslim American, I'd rather not support a party that would still give money to, you know, something that politically I'm opposed to.
So we know that Donald Trump, when he was running in 2016, literally talked about a Muslim ban. Mm-hmm. And voting for Jill Stein helps Donald Trump. And yet, that's where they are.
It is. And I think, you know, I was at the Democratic convention. You were there. It felt like Democrats thought this issue was settled once Kamala Harris became the nominee. And they no longer had to deal with Biden's sort of tin ear on this issue of Israel. Went to Detroit, went to this campus. Most of the students are from the Detroit area. Obviously, Michigan, about 250,000 Muslim and Arab voters, probably only 1 or 2% of the vote, but it was really, really hard to find Kamala Harris support on that campus. Those Jill Stein voters, we found them without even looking. Gaza is a single issue. It's the single issue for those students. I left Michigan the other day thinking, okay, there still could be a little bit of an undervote for Kamala Harris in Detroit. They didn't care that much about Donald Trump. They wanted to protest Kamala Harris and the White House's support for Israel.
And yet we know there's also, Melanie, a group of Jews who are very frustrated that the Democrats haven't supported Israel enough, and they're going to be voting for Trump.
I mean, this is a no-win situation for Democrats, whether it was Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. I think the thing that I find really interesting from your interviews, and I'm curious, when you were on the campus, I think there was a question, particularly last spring, when this was lighting up college campuses everywhere, was this going to be an issue that would be driving Muslim American, Palestinian American voters, or sort of college students more broadly? Would there be sort of a spillover effect? And I'm curious if you saw any of that.
We went to Savannah College of Art and Design in Georgia, private school, art school, a lot of blue hair, a lot of tattoos, a lot of girls in ripped jeans. Gaza came up there.
Yeah.
And not to the extent that it did in Michigan, where it was the issue, but those students were more likely to talk about Gaza and Israel, less likely to talk about economic issues, health care, gas prices. That stuff came up at the commuter campuses, at the land-grant universities, at the public schools, among the Black and Latino voters. Mm. The economy. Gaza felt more like a boutique issue down at Savannah College of Art and Design, whereas at Wayne State, with the Muslim students, it felt so personal and visceral to them.
Meanwhile, we often think about trash talk in the final week of an election, but this week we have literal trash talk. So this is a three-act play. Stay with me here. So Donald Trump hosts this big event in Madison Square Garden. This comedian comes out, makes a joke saying that Puerto Rico is a floating island of trash, garbage, and that creates a whole sort of controversy. So then Joe Biden comes out. He's going to have a Zoom with Voto Latino, and he ends up saying that Trump supporters are garbage. He may not have meant to say that, but that's what he said, and we know sometimes he struggles to communicate a message, which is why he's not the Democratic nominee right now. So then Donald Trump plays off of that, literally going out in a trash truck wearing a trashman's uniform, making this a huge issue on the campaign trail. Melanie, who does this help? Does it help anyone? Does this break through?
Well, it helps us on social media because it gives us something to write about. I mean, yes, there's in some ways all of the back and forth, in some ways I think maybe cancels out what is the ultimate effect. But particularly that the comedian's comments, that activated certain surrogates that the Democrats desperately wanted to get but had not yet gotten. Bad Bunny, I think, is the one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
That does matter. And it matters because there are a lot of Trump-curious Latino voters, particularly younger Latino men, who maybe were ready to maybe cross party lines, but that comment may give them a second guess. I'm not sure if Biden's comments gives anybody who is Kamala curious to be like, okay, now I'm going to retreat. But I do think that what Trump's rally did, I should say, is it took some people who may have been willing to consider Trump that weren't before and sort of slap them back. We saw that with Nicki Jam, who's a reggaeton artist who had supported Trump and said, I regret this now. Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of like what James Comey's letter did in 2016. That were Hillary curious and then said, oh yeah, I'm reminded of all the worst parts of her, I'm going with Trump. Your thoughts on this whole thing?
I think Melanie made the smartest point about this whole story. Democrats are slicing and dicing the electorate. There's 500,000 Puerto Ricans in Pennsylvania. There's Puerto Ricans in Reading. There's 1 million Puerto Ricans. They're proud people. Maybe this will break through. I think it's hard for things to break through this late in the campaign. A lot of people have already voted also, remember that. Bringing off the sidelines influencers that give Democrats some real credibility, not just with Latino voters. Bad Bunny is a massive, desperately needed celebrity for the Democratic Party. Yeah, they've got some cool ones, Billie Eilish, but like, we've seen Bruce Springsteen like wheeled out at events for like 5 cycles in a row. Get some cool surrogates out there. And so if you're one of the many, many, many millions of people following Bad Bunny on Instagram, you're like, oh, what's this about? Oh, the Trump people said this about Puerto Rico? Like, F that guy. So, you know, we'll see. I think it's a very smart point.
Yeah, Bruce Springsteen, my all-time favorite, 75 years old. So it's been a journey for Bruce. Also, Jennifer Lopez coming out because of that, and LeBron James just on this day
coming out
because of it,
and
Arnold Schwarzenegger as well.
Okay, we keep our discussion going now. We're going to talk about what is happening in the congressional races, starting in Orange County.
What does that mean for you to have Bill Clinton here?
Amazing, right? The crowd, the energy, the former president of the United States in Orange County. It's fantastic.
I spoke with Democratic congressional candidate Derek Tran this past weekend as Bill Clinton visited him in Buena Park this weekend. Governor Newsom, Adam Schiff, others will be in Orange County for Tran as he tries to defeat Republican Congress member Michelle Steele. The Cook Political Report says there are five true toss-ups in California, including Tran's race. We want to put them up on the screen. Here they are. Politico says that more than $200 million in outside money has been spent across New York and California on these races. We are back with our issue as panel, Politico's Melanie Mason and Snapchat's Peter Hamby. Melanie, you've reported extensively on this. Where do you see the state of the congressional races right now?
Well, look, we have been saying for a year the path to control of the House of Representatives runs through California, and the money bears that out. I mean, the amount of money that's being spent, that race that you just talked about between Derek Tran and Michelle Steele hit the $30 million mark in outside spending. Mm. That is just a mind-boggling amount for a congressional race. A congressional race.
Are there any particular races you're especially focused on?
Well, that 45, I think, has zoomed up to the top of my list, mainly because I don't think either party anticipated it would be as competitive as it really is. In fact, I think that they anticipated that the other Orange County race, the 47th district, which is the race to fill Katie Porter's seat, they thought that was going to be a real knockdown, dragout, an opportunity perhaps for Republicans to flip a seat. Republicans are on defense on all of these other main races that are going right now. But what we've seen is because that 45 race got so hot, it's attracted all of this money.
And Bill Clinton out there was basically casting this as if Trump wins, the House is probably the only way to check Donald Trump and the Republican agenda. And that's true.
It is. And yet we haven't seen the Democratic candidates make that argument quite so explicitly, I think because they don't want to look like they're throwing Vice President Harris under the bus. Most of the districts that are being fought in right now were districts that Biden won in 2020. And so we're seeing constantly Democrats trying to link Republicans, they're calling them the MAGA Republicans, link them to Donald Trump because they want Donald Trump to be an albatross for these Republicans. And, you know, I think that there's some reason to be optimistic, but I think 2020 was a great example of how, yes, Biden won these districts, but so did these Republicans. I think it's not going to be just a matter of Democrats saying Donald Trump bad and people getting Democratic votes down ticket.
I think they also have to, when we see this in the paid media and see it in the ads, but it's not just Trump is bad, Trump is going to ruin democracy. They're tethering him to the abortion question to drive up female turnout. And they're doing that everywhere across the country. When I was just in these battleground states, that's the majority of Democratic messaging. In the ads. And I think, you know, when I'm watching the Dodgers here in LA and I see all the ads from the Democratic groups, it's, you know, extremist Republican wants to take your bodily autonomy away. And I think that's pretty consistent.
Well, and it is a true fact that many of these Republicans in these close races sponsor the Life Begins at Conception Act, which would essentially outlaw abortion. They've tried to walk back and say they don't agree with that now, but that is something that they were in favor of.
Right, and you've seen Republicans on your show kind of twist themselves into knots, explain these past positions that they've taken. I just want to add one other topic, though, because I have a story coming out on this that maybe y'all can check out. Another issue that we have seen come into these ads at the end of this race is housing. And I think that's really important to note because housing was never really a topic in federal races before. I think both Democrats and Republicans have recognized that with the housing crisis being what it is in California, an economic issue that, quite frankly, neither party has an advantage on, we're seeing Democrats try to take the advantage, seize the upper hand, because I think they see issues like gas taxes, inflation, et cetera, as losers for them. Housing could be a way out.
And I heard housing so many times when I was talking to those college students all over the country. Doesn't matter what state you're in, but yeah, in California, very salient.
Next up in our discussion, I talk about homelessness and Governor Newsom. It's been a busy week for Governor Newsom in Hollywood. He announced a plan to expand California's film and TV credits to $750 million. He also visited the border to discuss the Tijuana River sewage crisis and ways to retrofit that area. And he was on Skid Row, where we met up with him for a big announcement on homelessness.
I'm approved that you could get out of homelessness. I'm approved that you could get out of addiction.
After surviving domestic abuse, Nancy Camacho became homeless, developed a drug addiction, and ended up behind bars.
What do you think was the biggest difference for you in turning the corner?
The help of the program.
Nancy received treatment at a program called the Walden House, and now helps others as a peer support specialist at the Downtown Women's Center.
You are an example of someone proving those that say, well, this just simply can't be done.
Nancy's story highlighted by California Governor Gavin Newsom at the Downtown Women's Center as he unveils $827 million in additional funds for local jurisdictions to combat homelessness.
We've also increased the accountability, transparency, and the expectations.
The biggest chunk, $380 million, is going to the L.A. region.
Governor Newsom.
It's welcome news for L.A. Mayor Karen Bass.
What are people going to see in front of them over the next year because
of
this money?
What? It's what I don't want them to see. I don't want them to see tents.
The city of Los Angeles saw a slight reduction in the number of homeless last year for the first time in many years. But if you look around here, it's clear this problem is far from being solved.
An audit last year revealed that California spent $24 billion on homelessness in the last 5 years, with little result.
Is this really about spending more money, or does something else have to change? And what do you say to people who don't trust that the money will be spent well?
Well, I hope they'll take a look at the specific proposals and what we've outlined here today.
Newsom says proof of that accountability is California recently taking legal action against both Norwalk and Huntington Beach after their city councils defied his mandates.
We mean business in a very different way than we have in the past.
Republican State Senator Roger Niello is skeptical of the governor's plan.
It's kind of more of the same. Dealing with the governor's statements, if I could have a nickel for every time he used the word accountable, if we don't get people to self-sufficiency, we're not going to cure their homelessness.
And the governor recognizes that this is an all hands on deck.
LA County Supervisor Catherine Barger is encouraged that the money is being distributed regionally after years of finger pointing between cities, counties, and the state.
I would agree with people. The frustration has been throwing money at the problem is only one part of it.
So what do you think the state is doing wrong when it comes to homelessness?
Number one is mental health.
Nancy Camacho has a message for those experiencing homelessness.
Take a chance. Take a leap of faith.
On what?
Take a leap of faith on the help.
Back with our panel, Peter Hamby, Melanie Mason. Melanie, you were out there with me, with the governor. Your thoughts on this?
He is somebody who's staring down now two final years in his term, and he's realizing that he will be judged on how he has done with dealing with this. And I think that the emphasis on accountability is going to be really key for these next 2 years. Clearly, there's a frustration among the public of the idea that we're throwing a lot of money on the problem. So now he's trying to sell the idea that, yes, there's money, but there is going to be transparency, there is going to be accountability, strings attached to make sure that money is being spent in the right way. Perhaps that will convince people that this money is being well spent.
It's the right word, but ultimately, mm-hmm. as Karen Bass said, it's about seeing especially those tents in front of you.
We wrap up our show with some final thoughts from our guests.
Last time it took 4 or 5 days before they called the race, should have called earlier. We might not know on election night. I think it'll be called before the Saturday after the election, but be prepared. This is going to go overnight as they continue to count ballots. We have lots of mail and absentees coming in, not as much as last time, but be patient.
Yeah, Melanie.
I mean, I think that's the exact right note to end on. Patience, patience, and, you know, trust but verify. There's a lot of crazy news out there, and we are going to enter peak shenanigans period. And so if you see something, a social media post that you think is maybe too crazy to be true, it probably is. Go to trusted news sources. I think that's probably the way to stay sane for this next week or 10 days.
Thank you both for all of the guidance over the last year. We wanted to end with a big show, and you're two of our favorite guests we've ever had. So thank you for being here.
Our thanks to Melanie and to Peter and to you for listening. Thanks so much for everything this entire year. It's really been a privilege and a joy to be able to have this platform to talk with you each and every week. Feel free to review some of our past shows if you want to know more about some of these candidates. We've talked to so many of them this year. Get educated and vote. Have your say. People have fought really hard for that, and it's so important to get out there, especially this year. And in California, especially you're in one of those close congressional races, it's really important as well. Your vote really could make a difference. I'm Alex Michelson. We'll see you next week, maybe, hopefully, possibly, with some results.